Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Lesego Holdings Financial Year 2014 Results Management Conference, hosted by African Alliance Capital Markets. All participants will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity to ask questions after today's presentation. If you should need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please also note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chad. Please go ahead, sir.
Good day, everyone. Thanks very much for dialing in today. With us, we have Mr. Colm Pattinson, CFO, Mr. Chris Lowe, MD, and Sean Brewer, CEO of Lesego Holdings. Just a big thank you to you guys for allowing us the opportunity to host the call today. Mr. Pattinson will be discussing the financial year 14 results. So please just ensure you have your presentations open. They were sent out, so if you could just make sure that you have that open in front of you. As mentioned earlier, we will be discussing the results, followed by some questions afterwards. Our analyst, James Stark, covers Lesego Holdings. He's unfortunately not available today, but any more details can be discussed with him. I would like to now hand over to Mr. Pattinson to discuss the results, please. Thanks very much. You may go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much, and thank you to African Alliance for giving us this opportunity. It's very welcome, and thank you for your interest in Lesego. What I'd like to do is hand over to our Group Managing Director, Mr. Chris Lowe, and he'll take us through the first part of the presentation. Chris, over to you.
Thanks, Colm, and good morning, good afternoon, everybody. Again, let me add my thank yous. A pack has been sent out to you, and we felt ahead of an overview of the numbers, which I'm sure you've had a good look at, it might be worth spending a few minutes running through the key messages around our strategy. When I came on board in November, the first task I was set by the board was to refresh our strategy, and out of that have come a number of clear directional aspects to our business that our current year performance that we're speaking about sets the scene. So assuming that you've got the pack, I'm going to talk through the first eight or so slides fairly quickly. The first slide talks about us as a leading financial services group. You'll be aware that we've been around for some 15 plus years now. Market cap-wise, we're in excess of half a billion dollars on the Botswana Stock Exchange, making us the largest multinational business headquartered in Botswana. We are rated Ba3 by Moody's, one notch below investment grade, and we've built a customer base in excess of 240,000 clients across a 10-country footprint in Eastern and Southern Africa. Our core business, which goes back to our origins, is lending to government employees, and this accounts still for over 90% of our business today. On slide five, we give some information regarding our customer numbers, our market shares, and our loan book size. Basically, between Botswana, Mozambique, and Namibia, our three largest countries, they today account for approximately 80% of our business, while the fact that Tanzania is our largest customer business highlights the fact that the size of loan to government employees varies considerably country by country. During our scan of the strategy, it became very clear that the competitive environment in which we operate varies significantly across our footprint. And as a result of that, the last column on this slide highlights whether we believe that there is room for growth. Not all of those traffic lights are obvious links to the previous data, but in a country like Namibia, where we have a 46% market share of government business, which equates to approximately one in four working persons in Namibia having a loan with us, there is today little competition in the payroll lending business. So without going into a lot of detail, we've done a deep dive and concluded that there is significant further opportunity in the payroll lending business. The next slide, slide six, refers to our diversification strategy. And those that have been following us over a number of years will know that over the last 5 years or so, we've increased from being primarily a Southern African business to an Eastern and Southern African business. In 2012, we bought Micro Africa Limited, which is a microfinance business with a presence in Kenya, Rwanda, Uganda, and Tanzania. That business does group lending, it does low-cost housing, and it does micro and small business loans, and provides the basis for diversification. I will come back to that in a minute. The bottom of that slide also shows you how the loan book, which originally obviously was 100% Botswana, is now only 42% concentrated in Botswana, and we will continue to drive that diversification. In my view, within a few years, we will have four or five countries which are all contributing significantly to our bottom line and to our loan book. Slide seven provides some support for the reputation we've built for delivering consistent, strong performance, growth, and returns for our shareholders. Over the last 5 years, we've seen a 30% year-on-year increase in our loan book. Indeed, the results for 2014 show a 33% increase, bringing our book up to just shy of 4.5 billion pula, or $450 million in a simple divide by 10 calculation. We've also effectively managed our risk, and we continue to maintain our impairment provisions at less than 2% of our book. From a profit after tax return on assets and return on equity, we have put in a strong performance over the years, an ROAA of around 14% is by most financial services companies a pretty reasonable return on assets, and our ROE is still about 20%. From an earnings per share, dividends per share, we believe the results provide support that we've created consistent value for our shareholders. Slide eight goes to the second side of our strategy, in that we've identified that there is a large adjacent customer base that will prove marginal for commercial banks and therefore less competitive for us, and it also embraces financial inclusion, which is an agenda item for every country in which we operate of the government. The triangle as presented there tries to illustrate the two sides of our business, the business side and the consumer finance side of it. Today, as a government employee lender, we lend to teachers, security forces, police, central government ministry employees, etc. However, governments that we're working with have got many challenges in managing the economy, be that tax collection, be that pensions payments, be that agricultural subsidy payments. And we believe that the credibility we've built over the years provides a huge opportunity for us to go and capture more of the government business, which today is serviced by the banks, often at a very high cost and with little other benefit to the government. So the first adjacent customer base is the government itself in terms of the products and service needs that they have. But there are also parastatals and other employees with large, relatively lowly paid employees. In Botswana, for example, we are already servicing the mining sector, and we're looking at a number of agriculture opportunities. So we believe diversification of the individual customer base is another leg to our strategy. And at the same time, moving across to the business side, of the economies. Commercial banks generally service the ME, the medium enterprise side of SME. We have identified through our research that there is a very large opening in the micro and small enterprise segments. These are generally not serviced by banks and often are funded indeed through some of the payroll loans that we provide to government employees where they've got businesses with their family, etc. We believe, again, this represents a large opportunity which can prove profitable with a cost-effective delivery channel approach to business. So, diversification away from payroll is very much now part of our strategy. As I will show, it's still a very small part of our strategy in terms of contribution today, but it provides the way forward alongside further upside in the payroll business. We've also identified that there is a need to better leverage our balance sheet and indeed diversify our funding sources. We are, in effect, funded two-thirds through retained earnings and only one-third through debt, while some of our peer groups are four times debt-to-equity ratio. I don't say we're going to go there, but there's certainly opportunities to improve our leverage and therefore our return. And similarly, we've done medium-term notes on the Johannesburg and this last year on the Botswana Stock Exchange. That has given us another source of debt funding, but we will continue to work with a number of commercial investment banks looking at how we can further leverage capital markets, and most importantly, how we can gain access to local currency funds. We do not wish to create significant foreign exchange exposure for the business. That's not the game we're in. We want to focus on the lending side of our business primarily and mitigate other risks surrounding the geographic footprint we have. We have, of course, talked about deposit taking in the past, and in February this year, we launched deposit taking in Mozambique. We have got a deposit taking microfinance license there, which will convert to a commercial banking license in due course. We also have a deposit taking microfinance license in Rwanda. In fact, in 8 of the 10 countries in which we operate, these what I call bank light licenses are available, and it's something that we are looking at keenly as it provides us greater access to customer wallet. It provides us a defense mechanism against potential removal of deduction codes, and it gives us access to transactional fee income, which today we cannot get. So the diversification and building of deposit-taking capability is yet another leg to our strategy. But to deliver this strategy, we've had to look at capabilities we have versus the capabilities that we need. And as a result of that, we have built the strategy around 5 core capabilities that we believe will deliver sustainable competitive advantage in this customer space that I've outlined. The first of those is customer experience. That covers everything from our sales and service models to the appearance of our branches to the delivery channels that provide low-cost, easy access for our clients. We also have developed from really our DNA a set of uniquenesses. We want our products to be very simple and easily understandable by our clients. We want to deliver products that are highly responsive, offering 24-48-hour guarantees. We want to be very clear around the appropriateness of our clients' products. We do not want to get a position where we are overlending to customers, which is why the deduction code and central registers is very important to us. Also, we wish to be highly ethical in our business, and we want to be inclusive. There have been occasions where the group has been accused of only catering to government employees. Clearly our strategy now has a broader scope to that. As a result of the strategy, which as I again repeat is around growing our payroll, our core business, it's around diversifying into micro and consumer financing, it's about building our deposit taking capabilities and about leveraging our strategy, we've come up with three categories of country. Those where we're going to invest to grow our existing business, primarily our payroll businesses, those countries that we're going to diversify and introduce micro and consumer finance capability, and South Sudan, which today sits in, as we know, a very unfortunate geopolitical situation, hold. We are no longer lending in Sudan. It is on a strict watch program with a senior executive visiting there in the next 2 weeks to decide what we do with that book. As part of the year-end results, Colin will mention this, we have taken a material provision for the South Sudan book, not material to group, to ensure that we've got adequate impairments should things worsen there before they get better. So customer experience, the second one, building capabilities, is innovation. That's not just in technology, that's in everything, be that risk management, cost management, approach to stakeholders, etc. Risk management, again, I'm sure some of you are thinking, well, if the strategy is diversification, it's deposit taking, there's a whole raft of new risks we'll be facing. By virtue of sticking to our simple and appropriate criteria, we believe that we will not significantly increase the risk profile of the business. However, we will be investing in risk management, individuals and technology to ensure that we do manage the credit risk, but actually other more generic systemic risks like payroll deduction codes, etc., have to be very much on our radar under risk management. The fourth building block is to invest in our people. We clearly have not done enough on this front, although as the new CEO, I've been delighted to find a young and motivated workforce who are keen to embrace the next stage of our growth strategy. And lastly, stakeholder engagement, that's governments, regulators, customers, media, investors, and communities. Clearly, we need to leverage better value for our business from each of these stakeholders. And that really brings me to the last couple of slides. We, as part of our brand promise, are committed to improving lives. This really came out of the research we did on what we've been doing. The majority of our loans are productive loans. They're used for customers for education, health, and business or livelihood improvement. We do not wish to encourage conspicuous consumption. The clients that we have are generally not able to afford that extra large TV set or that new 5-litre car or whatever it might be. We want to ensure that the funds we're providing are being used appropriately. I've mentioned the government agendas around financial inclusion and skills deepening. So, for example, we're working with the Botswanan government to help build financial skills within the government employee sector. Low-cost housing, I've mentioned in our Micro-Africa business in East Africa. This is, again, a need in most markets in which we operate. We're undertaking some research to see how to scale that business up, and we're also starting to work with some of the technical assistance DFI funders in Africa, as we feel that there are benefits to complement the strategy that we now have. And last but not least, we do have a commitment to set aside 1% of our profit after tax to invest in sustainable products. Last slide from me. Just to re-emphasize, we are fully committed to strengthen governance and regulatory compliance. My predecessor, Jan Klassen, retired last year when I took over from management position. He stepped down from the board in January after effecting his takeover. And in the last 12 months, we've added four new board members. Mr. de Kock, who is South African, has got extensive banking and treasury experience gained while at Sanlam. Mr. Karuhanga is a Ugandan national. His last major role was as chairman for Standard Bank in Uganda. He brings, again, a lot more banking knowledge. Stephen Price, who is a UK national based in Dubai, was for 20 years an Ernst & Young partner advising private equity on bank acquisitions. And Bob Thornton, who is a US national, worked with Citibank for many years and has got a wealth of knowledge in both Western and Southern African banking space. So we have significantly improved the independence of our board and significantly improved the support and advice and challenge that we as a management team receive. One of our long-standing directors from Sanlam, Margaret Dawes, also resigned recently and has been replaced by her alternate, Mr. Gerrit van Geur. We've changed our year-end, just by way of note, for this current year. So the next reporting period will be to 31st of December 2014. We've just renewed our cautionary announcement regarding a possible acquisition that we're pursuing in East Africa. I can't say more about that in this call because obviously that's under confidentiality agreements at this stage. So, a brief rundown on our strategy. We are going to continue to build on our core business of payroll lending. We are going to diversify into some micro lending and consumer financing. We recognize the need to better leverage our balance sheet and diversify funding sources. So our strategy to build deposit-taking capabilities is still very clearly on track. We will build a strategy off the back of our five core capabilities that I discussed. So, Colm, briefly over to you on some numbers. And then we'll open it up for questions and answers.
Thank you. Let me take you through the remainder of the slides. I'll go through it reasonably quickly, but we'll go into a little bit of detail where necessary. I think overall, from our perspective, we are quite pleased with the overall results for the year end of January 2014. From a revenue perspective, there was good growth. Our efficiency metrics, we believe, still are quite respectable. The company is very well capitalized, and that gives us a good base to look to enhance and develop and grow our funding lines. And the growth that we have achieved in terms of the balance sheet asset side hasn't been done at the expense of the quality of those assets, with the underlying cost of impairment or cost of risk still being quite respectable, under 2%. I'll go directly onto the income statement, which is slide 16. And just to highlight a few items there, on our interest income line, we have had some challenges in terms of and the competitive environment and margins, but that has not been unexpected. But we've been able to continue to diversify where our revenue comes from and at still quite good margins and respectable margins. The interest expense line, while it shows a decline year on year, that is as a result of some Forex gains that we did also have at half year, resulting from some open Forex positions within the group, mainly from intergroup lending. That is an area that, you know, we do want to try and close out on as much as possible. But for the last year under review, it did have an impact on bringing down our cost of borrowing. But from an overall perspective, The majority of our funding lines at the moment come from the two note programs. And our cost of borrowings in that respect comes to around about the 11-12% mark on an overall basis, and we fixed most of those rates. So one other point just to highlight is that on a presentation perspective, in prior years you would have seen line items in our income statement regarding premium income and related costs. Due to a slight change in the accounting standards, the disclosure around that has been simplified, but the underlying figures both for prior years and current year don't change. It's simply a disclosure matter. But other operating income you see has changed, has increased quite a bit, and that's driven primarily from the income that we've generated from the insurance arrangements that we have. On the cost side, while we're very satisfied with the increase in revenues, clearly there has been an increase in costs as well. From a staff employee benefits side of things, I think there's three sort of things to highlight there. One, there was some costs around the exit of the outgoing MD and indeed the incoming MD. So full details around that will be disclosed in our annual report. That should be available during the course of May. We continue to grow the team and invest in the human capital aspect. The group is continuing to grow and going into new areas, so it is, we believe, a good investment to make. And finally, from a comparative perspective, we've consolidated 12 months of the East African business that we acquired in 2012, MicroAfrica, for a full 12 months in this financial year, whereas from a comparative period last year, it was 7 months. So that has a slight impact as well. On the operating expenses, similarly, the explanation on the staff costs with MicroAfrica has an impact. Second of all, because we have been investing in CapEx and new systems that Sean is driving quite a bit, there has been a slightly increased depreciation charge as those assets come into use. And thirdly, from a conservative perspective, we did make some once-off provisions. As an example, would be provisions that we've made against the underlying assets in South Sudan. So while that is not a cash cost, from a P&L perspective, we felt it was prudent to make that provision. So again, in summary, from revenue side, quite pleased. Costs, we believe that they are investments that are appropriate to make and will bring due rewards in the future. And that gave an override, from an overall perspective, a reasonably flat year in terms of profitability. Earnings per share was down at 9%, mainly arising from the conversion of a loan that was in place during April 2013. That had a dilutive impact of about 8% or so, and that generally ran through into the earnings per share figure. From a balance sheet perspective, briefly, what we believe, I think, is a good message to make is that the funds that we've raised back in December 2012, which show up in the January 2013 balance sheet from the South African Note Program, we were able to deploy them reasonably quickly into good quality assets, income-generating assets. And similarly, at the end of 2014, that really reflects the cash, a lot of the cash that we generated from the Botswana leg of the Note Program. So, and we still believe that we will be able to deploy that cash into good quality assets going forward. On the loans and advances side, again, I think we touched on it, a good increase that was driven primarily by our three major markets, Botswana, Namibia, and Mozambique. And also, we touched on it earlier, the CapEx, the plant and equipment, that does reflect the extra spend, or the spend that we are incurring, and we have done the last year or so, and we will for another year or so, as part of an exercise to one-to-one single ICT platform across all of our footprints. So from a balance sheet point of view and a P&L point of view, they were a couple of items that I wanted to highlight. I think in the interest of time, I won't go too much further on. And I think we can go on to a Q&A session at this stage. So I think if we can hand back to yourself to manage the Q&A process.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then 1 on your touchtone phone. If you decide to withdraw the question, please press star and then 2 to remove yourself from the question queue. Again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then 1 now. Our first question comes from Lily Stein from ADC Germany. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much for giving me the chance to take part in this call. I have two questions regarding your strategy, with the first one being that you just mentioned that you're planning to acquire a bank in East Africa. Do you have any further expansion plans? And my second question is that you state in your strategy that you heavily rely on innovation. So can you please further elaborate on this point, whether what you mean with innovation, and especially on the technology part of this?
Okay. Shall I address? I'll address the acquisition, and I'll ask Sean Brewer, my COO, to comment on innovation. Clearly, inorganic opportunities are part of our strategy, where we see opportunistic availability of licenses. I talked about the deposit-taking microfinance license, but in some countries, the opportunity to get a banking license fits well with our strategic direction, but we wouldn't be looking to deploy the full suite of banking products, and by that I'm referring to we wouldn't want to be in trade and foreign exchange and the like. In a nutshell, yes, we are looking at a number of opportunities that will either accelerate our organic plans in a country or will move us into new countries where we don't have a presence. On innovation, Sean, maybe if you could just say a few words on that, please.
Okay, thank you, Chris. The innovation, as Chris pointed out, is not just technology, but I think your question is specifically related to technology. Essentially, as part of our deposit-taking rollout, we're looking at the innovations that technology can assist us with, where we can gain a competitive advantage within the markets that we operate in. So this is from financial inclusion and the likes, and also includes being able to deploy technology where it will help us to reach out into markets that typically not be accessible by other banks. So we're looking at really just leveraging off technology to improve our competitive advantage. I don't want to go into too much detail about what exactly that technology is, but it's safe to say that we've looked at emerging markets and the technology that they've used to reach out into for financial inclusion and this type of markets, and that's what we will be deploying in our markets. I think, Chris, I don't know what else I should say in terms of innovation.
Well, it was enough. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next question comes from Shara Dua from Charlemagne. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for your time on this call. A couple of things for me. First of all, Colm, just on the costs, you've obviously mentioned a few things there which you're suggesting are one-off in nature, i.e. the costs of an outgoing and incoming CEOs, the cost of South Sudan impairment, and the full consolidation of Micro-Africa. Could you give some indication as to what the sort of comparative cost increase therefore was for the period just ended, and you know, maybe put some numbers on some of those one-offs to help us do that?
Thanks for the question. I think at this stage, what our approach is going to be is that when the annual report comes out, I think you'll see a bit more detail. But I think at this point in time, we don't want to go into too much detail regarding this specific cost or that specific action. And it's just rather to give yourself assurances that while there were some one-offs in there, some were significant, not so much. But just from an overall perspective, we do believe that the costs involved were appropriate. And I think we might be seeing ourselves sometime soon as some of the conferences are coming, and we can probably go into it in a bit more detail at that point in time. But for the purposes of today's call and the general sort of comments, we'd like to keep it reasonably high level at this stage.
Sure. Okay. All right. Well, then the other question would be, you know, talking of some of the diversification and going into a bit more, you know, the business, the SMEs, and the microfinance on the asset side. Can you give some sort of indication as to what that trend would mean for the your margins going forward, and also the, you know, the cost of risk as to what sort of level would be appropriate as your mix changes?
Yeah, I'll make some comments on that. I mean, firstly, if I can emphasise that we want to play in the MSE space, the micro and small enterprise, we're not going to go into the any of SME, just so that it's clear that we're not competing in that commercial banking space. In terms of margins, I think it is fair to say that the types of margins that we're achieving in our microfinance business in East Africa are reflective of where we'd expect them to continue. These margins are driven by a need to recover some of the costs associated with often quite labor-intensive risk management processes. I'd expect to maintain the gross margin, but to see some erosion at the cost level, because they're going to go up. From a funding perspective, we talked about balance sheet leverage and diversification. We are looking to find cheaper funding sources, which then leads me back to why in some markets obtaining a banking license can make sense, giving us access to interbank and other sources of funds. So the last area you mentioned is non-performing debt. One of the slides, if you've received the pack, showed East Africa versus Southern Africa. While on the payroll side of the business, we've managed to contain our impairment charges at 1.5% to 2% of our book. As microfinancing expands, we could see impairments in the order of 5% to 10% based on past experience. But I think I'll put a positive spin on that, in that our strategic plans do not envisage the microfinance business becoming that material for a number of years. Our core business, as I said at the beginning, has still got a lot of runway ahead of it, and we wish to significantly up our engagement with government.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next question comes from Edward Kitani from Lionbridge Investments. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the presentation. I just have one question. In the presentation, you've shown that loans and advances grew by 33%, while the net interest income was up by 15.1%. Could I assume that most of the lending happened towards the end of of the reporting period, or what might have happened?
Edward, thanks. It's a combination, Edward. It would be a timing issue in terms of what the when the growth in some of the advances books took place. And secondly, we did mention earlier on in terms of our margins, and in some territories, we have reduced our margins slightly to be competitive. So it's a combination of those two things, Edward.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one. Our next question comes from Thapologo Mutshepi from Adam Gray.
Hi, thanks for that. So I'm just looking at slide 6, where you speak about the increasing diversity from a geographic perspective, but I guess what's evident is, you know, if you look at some of the gross yields earned on the book, those have come down from about 55% to 30% today. So I guess my question is, you know, where does this end in terms of margin compression? I know you've spoken about your, you know, certain other, you know, segments that you want to go into in terms of other business lines, but I mean, it's great that you're more geographically diversified, but it seems that it's, you know, it's come at some kind of a cost, right? The yields are a lot lower. So if you can give some thought on that, or give us your
thoughts. Okay, happy to do that. It was very clear to me when I came in to the business that the group has relied almost entirely on net interest income for its revenues, with little focus given to opportunities for fee business or fees. While I want to also be clear that we don't intend to start introducing a whole range of inappropriate charges, many of the services we provide, like emergency top-up loans to existing clients, we have been doing it for no service cost to the client. So there are some simple wins to be had for convenience. In addition to that, we believe that the nature of the borrowing requirement could justify a higher level of setup fee and the like. Over and above that, in our strategy, and I didn't make reference to this, so thank you for this opportunity, it's quite clear that as a distribution company, we are attractive to the likes of insurance companies, and we are in discussions with several entities as to how we could offer micro-insurance, which would give us another stream of non-funded income. When you look at the split between net interest income and non-funded income, I think our results show us at about 11 or 12%, really quite low within the results. I would like to see that on the higher side of 20% plus in due course. So a very clear area of focus to counteract what you've readily seen.
Thanks for that. Just one follow-up question. In terms of one of these more mature markets where you've got these deduction codes, what would you say is the general sentiment towards these deduction codes? So you had a bit of a scan before, say 18 months, two years ago, where it seemed like the deduction codes may be taken away. Is your expectation that deduction codes are sustainable in the long term? If you look at the banks in Botswana as well, they're doing a form of this deduction, or I guess it's a certain type of this deduction lending as well, in that they would go to a corporate and give it a scheme loan, and in return for doing the scheme loan, the kind of interest rates that the underlying employees are having to pay are a lot lower than what they pay, say, from a debit order. Right, so what I'm saying is the banks are doing something similar at much lower rates than the toll is doing. So I guess I'm just trying to find out, you know, even if payroll deductions are sustainable, are they sustainable at the kind of yield that you're getting now? So I appreciate the comments you made about alternate, ways to mine the book more efficiently or more effectively, but I'm really trying to get at the heart of the sustainability of the current model.
Okay, I think there's several dimensions that I can talk to, and I'll ask Colin to come in on the Botswana specific, but my understanding was more a political pull between government and the unions than a real effort by the government to remove the payroll deductions. I think the story of South Africa is often raised on that point, that the way it was done there caused significant financial disruption, and I think governments, therefore, to answer your comment about the general sentiment, have realised that a deduction code carries with it a number of positives for the economy in terms of allowing individuals that might go to money lenders, Shylocks, and the like. To have access to credit at more reasonable rates. I hear you when you say banks are doing it at lower rates. It also gives them an ability to control the level of indebtedness and through applying affordability criteria, which we often get involved working with governments on, means that they can ensure that their staff are having appropriate access to credit. So they can see the economic advantage, they can see the advantage for their own staff, and they also are very keen that at these sectors of the market, segments of the market, that conspicuous consumption is not promoted. So it also gives them another way of, if I can put it like this, those companies that do offer consumables for purchase, they have to take higher risks in doing it. Now, with your second part of that question about is it sustainable at the types of interest rate that we're charging, requires a different perception around cost of finance versus access to finance. And usually the individuals we're dealing with are much more interested in the amounts they can borrow over what periods, because that increases the amounts they can borrow as opposed to what it costs them. So in the mature markets, of which Botswana is a good example, coming back to that, while obviously, we've seen erosion in our gross interest rates. Those have now leveled off, with banks still several percentage points lower than us, but a recognition by our client base that actually we're far more responsive. We turn things around in 24 hours, 48 hours, particularly if you've been with us for a while. And we have emergency top-up and, because we continually are packaging our products so that they meet the client's needs very specifically. Banks tend to do a bit plain vanilla, okay, you're on this payroll, this is the rate we're charged if we can get a salary deduction from your employer. Otherwise, we're not interested, full stop. So it's quite a different mindset from the client and quite a different approach in how you present the offering. I don't know if that's answered your question or whether you'd like Colin to say more about the Botswana. It is a bit historic in our mind, and we don't see similar circumstances in other countries today.
Yeah, look, I guess if Colin's got something to add, I'd appreciate it.
Well, to tell you, I wasn't going to go back into the history on the deduction codes in Botswana. My comment is more around the item that you raised on the commercial banks and their rates being lower, and Chris has spoken about it quite a bit, but this isn't a new phenomenon. The banks have been our major competitor in Botswana for the last 5 or 6 years, and in that time we've been able to grow our book significantly. and maintain margins, although, as you said, they have come down. So it was really around that that, you know, while Lusego was born out of banks not being interested in this space, that's completely changed, and it's not a new phenomenon, and we've been able to deal with it that well.
Thank you very much, sir. Our final question comes from Rishay Lana from Amigo Partners. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. James, thanks very much for the call and the briefing. Just a question from a top level, where there seems to be an evolution in the business model from purely fast payroll lending into your MSD, as you call it, the micro and small market. Could you, management obviously has some targets that they've set for the medium term. Could you speak to some of those, just to give us an idea of the altered business model in terms of cost to income leveling up and the cost of risk levels, and also the ROE that you'd be targeting with the new business?
I'm not sure I'm allowed to give public forecasts around where the business will go. I can give you a directional indication of which we've touched on in one of the other questions.
Okay.
It is accepted by the board that diversifying into microfinance lending brings with it a higher cost of doing business. That said, a pure single country micro lender's cost would be far higher than we predict ours would as a group, because we can leverage off the efficiencies we've already built for our payroll business, be those centralized processing, be that the fact we have a centralized data and communications network data center in Johannesburg. So we can bring to the table much lower cost ways of delivering our products, and the benefit therefore follows through that we can maintain margin for longer than if we were a standalone company setting up in its own country. So yes, there will be creep in the cost income ratio, but there is no intention that we move to the levels that you see in the banking sector.
Okay. And just to follow up on that, in terms of the move in the diversification, what sort of balance are you expecting to achieve in terms of public income from coming in from payroll and also from the MSD?
Look, in our strategic perspectives at this stage, we have played down growth because we have to build capability, which we don't have in many countries today. Yes, MAL brings us technology innovation. We are signed up to M-Pesa, for example, in Kenya for collections. We use tablet technology for account monitoring and the like. We want to, and the question earlier about innovation, is take some of that innovation and apply it to other countries. But at the same time, many of the countries are not nearly as evolved in money purses outside the banking sector, for example. So in our strategic outlook, while there is a change in the mix, be it the asset mix, be it the revenues that you're alluding to, it is not significant enough that I'd say to you, well, it's 50-50 business or anything like that. Today, one of the slides near the end there, which we didn't go through, shows that our microfinance and group lending business is about 4% of our total assets. That could go to double digit over the next couple of years. However, we are hopeful that in a couple of years' time, we will have found the business model to make this highly effective, so we will be able to give you a different figure. But our strategy today is very prudent on that front. We know the payroll business. We've done it very well in the past. We see lots of runway to the future. So let's ensure that we continue to build that business and supplement it with I think you called it an evolution in the strategy through some diversification on products and customer segments, combined with the point raised by the lady earlier on, possibly some geographic diversification as well. If we combine that with diversified and lower funding costs, we've got a very sustainable future ahead of us.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, a final reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one now. We will pause a moment to see if there are any further questions. We have a follow-up question from Tapolokho.
Thanks. So just on the Zambian business, why was that one sold?
In a nutshell, two reasons. The difficulty of operating in Zambia with operational losses, fraud attempts and like and so forth made it a very difficult environment, combined with which there were some ethical questions around how the central registry payroll deductions were going to be facilitated, and as we have zero tolerance for bribery and corruption, we took a call that it made no sense to continue that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Our final question comes from Edward Gitani from Pandage Investments.
Thank you. Could you give us some sort of an idea what kind of interest margin do you enjoy across the region, maybe between East Africa and Southern Africa?
We get asked this question from time to time, and we're rather loath to provide specific country margin, mainly because there are different factors in different countries which may make a margin of as high as 30 to 40% look very high in one country versus a margin as low as 10 or 15% in a more mature market. To us, and we talked about fee business, we talked about convenience, will be a shift in the mix between our pure interest margin and our fee business to better reflect the service we're giving versus the funds we're providing. And I think that's really the key point. Over time, all these markets are evolving, whether it's in maturity of regulation, whether it's in the level of competition from the banks and or other payroll lenders. So we do have quite a wide range. I've given you an indication of the type of ranges we might have without giving you country. But there are usually good reasons. The inevitable is that those margins have a downward direction, and therefore we as a business have got to reposition our product set and how we charge clients.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, a final reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one now. We will pause a moment to see if there are any further questions. Gentlemen, that was our final question. Do you have any closing comments?
I will just, again, like to thank the participants on the call for this opportunity. We are very excited by the growth prospects for the group. When I joined about 6 months ago, I inherited a very sound platform, a very motivated and enthusiastic team. With the way technology is moving, with the way banks are being constrained due to regulatory compliance issues, Basel II, Basel III, the opportunity to remain focused in this evolving space just below where banks tend to go down to, whether it's on the business or the consumer segment, to me is very, very exciting. And I believe with an ability to build the right capability, with a very prudent approach to diversifying the business, with a focus on developing deposit-taking capability, we are at the beginning of the next phase of significant growth of our business across Africa. and hopefully not just across southern and western and eastern Africa. So thank you all again very much for the opportunity, and I hope during the next few months, Colm and I are attending a number of investor conferences in the UK and in East Africa. I'm also making a trip to New York in early July. I hope there will be an opportunity to meet with some of the voices I now know and put faces to names and again have a little more knowledge of the business by then. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the Tshega Holdings and African Alliance Capital Markets, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.